From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Federal fishery managers might change how they divvy up halibut available for harvest in the Gulf of Alaska. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council voted last week to review its current plan and consider sending more of the resource to the charter fishing fleet when halibut abundance is low. It's a divisive issue that drew heated testimony from stakeholders across southeast and south central Alaska last week, but proponents of the plan hope it can be a backstop in case a preferred approach to compensate commercial fishermen for quota falls through. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Homer is among the Alaska communities that will be impacted by any changes in allocation. Brian Ritchie is a charter operator out of Homer and vice president of the Homer Charter Association. He says he worked with Councilmember Andy Mesereau to draw up some potential ways that allocation could be divided.
I'm 31 years old, so I wasn't here for a lot of the initial, the original fights that happened over allocations in the past several decades. But I understand that there are still some deep wounds and a lot of people are afraid of seeing that kind of divisiveness again.
Think about halibut allocation like a pizza. The pie in its entirety represents the total amount of halibut that fishermen from all sectors are allowed to catch in a given season. Each sector, commercial or charter, gets its own slice of the pie. Some years, when halibut abundance is worse off, that pizza is smaller, and so the slices are smaller too. That's why Councilmember Mesereau, who runs a charter business out of Seward, says the council should consider recutting the pizza. When it's too small, they get left with very little, he says, and have to close or limit trips. The council was due to consider reviewing its current catch-sharing plan anyway this year. Mesereau says it was a good time to reconsider how the plan was hurting charter operators. He suggested the council consider making the charter sector slice bigger when abundance is low, simultaneously shrinking the commercial slice. And in times of greater abundance, he says the charter slice should get smaller. But commercial halibut fishermen say that's unfair. They want to get paid for the pizza, not give it away for free. Pizza metaphors aside, commercial fisherman Malcolm Milne says he's disappointed the council took a step further than its advisory panel did. Milne fishes for halibut out of Homer and heads the North Pacific Fisheries Association, a group for Cook Inlet commercial fishermen.
I thought the ranges were a little excessive, and people who have quota are understandably nervous that the quota that they thought that they were investing in under a regime or a stated policy is now subject to change.
Last year, commercial fisherman Eric Velsko of Homer suggested to the council's advisory panel that it factor another figure into the equation, bycatch, or the incidental take of halibut in other fisheries. Bycatch has historically been responsible for 7-14% of area-wide halibut mortality. Of that bycatch, the majority comes from the trawl fleet, according to the council's report.
They keep dividing up these communities. You know, we live with these guys. Our kids go to school together with charter operators. And I just think it's crazy. We just totally disregard the bycatch.
The panel voted against incorporating Velsko's amendment into the plan. There is a chance, however, that another plan altogether goes into place. That plan would allow charter operators to buy quota from willing commercial fishermen, something called compensated reallocation. The program would be one of the first of its kind and is waiting on federal approval. The bill already passed through Congress once in 2020, but was vetoed by former President Donald Trump 2 weeks before he left office. The council says it would prefer that method and would likely table any conversations about uncompensated allocation if it passes. But Mesereau says he wants to make sure there's a policy placeholder in case it doesn't go through right away.
Uncompensated reallocation is not our first choice, but getting a look at this one more time, giving us a chance to see if there's a landing place, is doing our due diligence.
Council member Cora Campbell wasn't convinced. Campbell's the CEO of processing company Silver Bay Seafoods, and she says rehashing the allocation debate will be destabilizing for communities like hers.
And unfortunately, this further analysis comes at a real human cost. I live in the community of Sitka, and that community was torn apart by this allocation dispute. And some of those wounds have not yet healed. And the idea that we would do something like this, just we shouldn't do it lightly.
She was one of the three no votes on Mesereau's motion. Mesereau says it's important to note that a reconsideration of allocation does not necessarily mean the council will change how it slices the pie. A review of the current plan is expected to come before the council in December. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Chichagof Island community of Pelican is negotiating the sale of the city-owned processing plant to its current tenant, Jacobi Fisheries, the sole processor in town. But as KCAW's Tash Kimmel reports, this comes after city leaders rejected a $500,000 offer from an investor group seeking to buy the commercial property.
Pelican is a small community, but it is a fishing community. And for 5 years, it was a fish town without a processor to buy the local fleet's salmon catch. That changed in 2015 when Jacobi Fisheries, owned by Pelican resident Seth Short, restarted operations in a former crab plant owned by the city. Today, they're the economic engine of the town of around 55 permanent residents, processing about $1.5 million in fish last season. Now, the city is negotiating the sale of the former crab plant, which Jacobi Fisheries has been leasing for the past 8 years. Stewart says Jacobi Fisheries is invested in Pelican.
We'd like to be in control of the future of our business and not have someone else in control of it.
That specter of outside control was raised in recent months. An investor partnership has offered $500,000 for the crab plant building, but the city wasn't interested. Kent Crayford, co-owner of Alaska Seaplanes, was involved. The other half of the partnership is Steve Daniels, who owns a charter fishing lodge in town. Daniels says the city never acknowledged their offer.
I waited for some kind of response from the city for over 5 weeks, I believe. And then finally there was a meeting and it wasn't on the agenda.
The pair is now threatening legal action if the city doesn't consider their offer, which they say would allow Jacobi Fisheries to remain as a long-term tenant. Pelican Mayor Patricia Phillips didn't want to be recorded for this story, but in an interview, she said that the city council feels Jacobi owning the property would be the best option for a community which is rooted in commercial fishing. Critics are concerned about a new city ordinance that would allow the sale of the crab plant to Jacobi for below market value, so long as it fosters economic development. The ordinance was passed unanimously by the city council in December. One of the most vocal critics has been Pelican resident Gerald Voss. He's concerned the city council is acting against the long-term interest of the community by crafting what he fears could be a sweetheart deal for the biggest business in town. He notes that a majority on the council are linked to the commercial fishing industry.
It makes it so a small group of people can pretty much take over the town with their votes. So 4 votes on a council, they can do anything they want.
Kent Crayford, one of the spurned investors, says the issue is not that the city has apparently chosen to sell to Jacobi, but rather that they failed to be transparent with other potential buyers.
They have one opportunity to maximize the return on the sale of that asset for the people of Pelican. You know, they have a responsibility, a fiduciary responsibility to the people of Pelican. And so what's just confusing to me is why they haven't given our proposal it's due and equal consideration.
But Pelican's mayor, Patricia Phillips, insists that the city council is following the will of its citizens. She says the city has received some 40 letters supporting the sale. Jacobi Fisheries has invested in Pelican, and the city recognizes that, says owner Seth Stort.
Generations of fishermen have delivered fish in Pelican, and it's amazing to have these people that have been fishing for 40 years and how happy they are that they can do that again. There's a real community that's based in commercial fishing that lasts more than just a season or more than just that one delivery. These people have been coming here for years.
Pelican's mayor says negotiations over terms of a sale are ongoing and no decisions have been made. There will be public meetings before anything's final. In the meantime, would-be investor Steve Daniels says he's shopping for an attorney. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Tosh Kimmel.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
A weak run is again forecasted for the Upper Cook Inlet sockeye, continuing a trend of poor runs that has fishermen worried about the future of the fishery. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the story.
Set netter Ken Coleman is vice president of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association, which represents east side set netters. He's among the commercial fishermen disappointed with the forecast released by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Monday, which projects a run of under 5 million sockeye in 2022. About 3 million of those fish, the forecast says, will be available for harvest by all users.
It unfortunately may be the harbinger of the future.
Forecasted run is weak by historical standards. The inlet's 20-year average is about 6 million fish. But runs over the last few years have fallen below that. The sockeye run in 2020 was so bad that the U.S. Secretary of Commerce declared it a disaster. The state said in its letter to the feds that changing ocean conditions were partly to blame for the drop. Fishermen also criticize Fish and Game for over-escaping the Kenai River several years in a row, which they say can cause poorer runs down the road. Managers say that might be true. They also say they're following their management plan to conserve struggling king salmon. Coleman worries that plan will put sockeye in peril, too.
We're trying to protect one stock, but we may be harming the other one, the sockeye, as part of that regime. And then you've got two stocks in peril. And it's a difficult management issue to juggle, quite frankly.
A large part of the inlet will also be closed to commercial salmon fishing this year. A federal council voted to close part of the inlet in 2020 after the state said it was unwilling to manage the area alongside the federal government. The Kenai and Susitna River forecasts are also below average for 2022. And the sockeye projections come at the heels of a dismal king salmon forecast. The Department of Fish and Game, predicting a low, late run of about 16,000 large kings, is limiting the sport fishery to retention only in July. Ray DeBartoleben owns Long Live the Kings Lodge on the Kenai, and he's president of the Kenai River Professional Guide Association. He says even though both forecasts are bad, he'll be sending his guides on sockeye trips.
You know, we have to do the best what's for the fishery, and at this point, we're going to go out and try to catch some sockeyes, and if there's available king trips, then we'll go king fishing. If not, we'll go with plan B.
Brian Marston is Fish and Game's area manager for Upper Cook Inlet Commercial Fisheries. He says the fish forecasts are not to be taken as gospel. There's some information about the runs that the department can only glean once the runs pick up.
The one thing that this forecast doesn't do, and it never does, is it doesn't predict run timing. You know, that just can significantly change the way we manage the fishery if that happens. But we won't know that until in-season numbers come in.
Last year's sockeye run performed better than expected, with nearly 6 million fish. Commercial fishermen, who netted about 1.4 million sockeye that year, largely considered it a below-average season. In the meantime, there are multiple lawsuits in motion over the management of the commercial fishery, including one over the Cook Inlet closure. Separately, a coalition of fishermen took state fishery managers to court in 2019, alleging the Dunleavy administration was deliberately putting commercial fishermen out of business in favor of sport fishing interests. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.